have been traveling back from the feast on their way home, and they agreed to come by here and have the first message for today. So now we get to hear from Mr. Greg Dullum.
Thank you very much, and good morning to you. It's good to be with God's people on this Holy Sabbath day. I hope all of you have had a wonderful feast, and now it's back to the world for us. It's a little difficult sometimes to leave the feast. I wish sometimes that the feast could go on and on and on, but as they mentioned, I think we were in Ocean City, Maryland, that if they were to do that, we'd eventually run out of money, so we'd have to come home anyways. We decided to go to Ocean City, Maryland. We live in Missouri, and we're trying to get to all 50 states before we die. So we've been to 49 of the 50 states now. We wanted to pick up the New England states. We had never been there. And a few years ago, we did go to Pennsylvania, to Lancaster, when that was a feast site. And they took us on a bus trip into New York City to see a Broadway play. It was Mary Poppins. And we had a friend with us who was from New York, and he said, well, Times Square is just a little ways away, just a couple blocks. Let's walk over to Times Square, because we had dinner first, and then we had a little bit of time before the play. So we saw Times Square. We saw New York City. It's like, wow, this is really neat to be in New York City. But we did not get to see the Statue of Liberty, and not even from a distance. And so this year we thought, well, one of the things I wanted to do was see the Statue of Liberty. So we drove up and saw that after the feast. And if you've never seen it in person, it is really something. You just get this awesome feeling to come over here to see it in person. It's different than looking at pictures or watching it on television. And another thing we wanted to do during this trip to New England was to visit the very first Sabbatarian Church of God church building in Newport, Rhode Island. And so we went there, too. We found it. We went to the graveyard where some of the very first people from our church that came to America, Stephen and Ann Mumford, are buried. We found their tombstone and took pictures of those, too. And then another thing we wanted to do was go up to Maine. We had never been there. And then we came across to Niagara Falls. We've never been there. And we watched the waters going over the falls. It's an awesome sight, truly. Magnificent waterfall there, which I'm sure you've seen pictures, or if you haven't been there, you've seen pictures or seen that in movies and television as well. But a beautiful sight. And then we crossed over into Canada, saw it from the Canadian side as well. And then we drove all day yesterday and got in last night. But it's been we had a good feast and a nice trip going home, and it's good to be with you today on the Sabbath. You know, there are a number of people in the Bible that we would call Bible superheroes. Some that come to my mind are Noah, Abraham, Moses, Joshua, Samuel, David, Esther, Peter, Paul, John. Those are just some of the, you know, there's a lot written about them in the Bible. They had a close relationship with God. And he used them to do a big work. And in our times, there have been some superheroes, I guess, throughout the history of the church. The most recent one that comes to my mind would be Herbert Armstrong. Because whether directly or indirectly, we are all here in the church because of him, because of the work that he did, or that God did through him. In fact, in our church area, there is a couple that contacted our minister just recently and wanted to start coming to church. They had never been a part of the Worldwide Church of God in the past, but they had heard about the work through Mr. Armstrong's teachings. So his work is still going on. But we can't all be superheroes. We tend to be regular folks. You know, we tend to be followers instead of leaders. And today, I would like to look at the life and the legacy of an ordinary man in the Bible and see what we can learn from his experiences. I would like to learn a little bit, or let's learn a little bit about Lot, who was the nephew of a Bible superhero, You know, he was Abraham's nephew. So the title of my split sermon is A Little About a Lot. A Little About a Lot. Lot was an ordinary person, a lot like you and I. He went through some difficult trials, and in the end, he was called Righteous Lot by Peter in 1 Peter 2:7. Well, what does it mean to be righteous? I guess a simple explanation would be that means to be right with God. Psalm 119 and verse 172 says, "All thy commandments are righteousness." So if Lot was righteous, that means he kept God's law. When Peter called him Righteous Lot. And you know, when it's all said and done, wouldn't we like to be called that? Righteous blank, and put your name in the blank. Isn't that how we would like to be known when it's all over with? Say, you were a righteous person. So let's go back and read about Lot's life. Let's start in Genesis 11 and verse 27. Actually, I think Lot kind of got a bad rap by some people. I was reading one Who's Who book about him, and it had nothing good to say about the man. But I think if we go back and look at his life, we will see that he wasn't as bad as this particular book said he was. Genesis 11, and in verse 27, it says, "This is the genealogy of Terah. Terah begot Abram, Nahor, and Haran. Haran begot Lot." So here we see that Lot was Abraham's nephew, and when he was still young, Lot's father died. We'll read that in the next verse. "And Haran died before his father Terah in his native land in Ur of the Chaldees." So his father died. Now it's difficult to lose a parent at any age, but it's particularly hard when we're young. Some people get depressed and all bent out of shape when they unexpectedly lose a loved one. And yet, going through this difficult time did not make Lot bitter. And in spite of the trial, he remained a righteous man. Let's skip down to verse 31. "And Terah took his son, Abram, and his grandson Lot, the son of Haran, and his daughter-in-law Sarai, and his son Abram's wife, and they went out with them from Ur of the Chaldees to the land of Canaan, and they came to Haran and dwelt there." So Grandpa Terah took Uncle Abraham, Aunt Sarah, and Lot away from their home in Ur of the Chaldees. Now, Ur of the Chaldees was a very beautiful, civilized place. Unger's Bible Dictionary says, "The famous royal cemeteries dating about 2500 B.C. yielded jewelry and art treasures of unbelievable beauty, particularly gorgeous head attire, personal jewels, and a golden tumbler and cup of Queen Puabi. Several musical instruments and other beautifully crafted objects demonstrate that this city had achieved a high level of civilization 500 years before Abraham." So he lived in a very civilized area, but now Grandpa picks up the family and they move away from there. Moving away from family, friends, and all you call home can be a very stressful thing. Some people get bitter over it, but not Lot. Three significant things happened while Lot lived in the great trading center of Haran. Number one, the family grew rich with possessions and servants. Number two, Grandpa Terah died. And number three, God called Abram. In Genesis 11, and verse 32, "So the days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran." Now, continuing in chapter 12, verse 1, "And the Lord God said to Abram, get out of your country and from your kindred and from your father's house to the land that I will show you." And verse 4, "So Abram departed as the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot went with him. And Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. And Abram took Sarai, his wife, and Lot, his brother's son, and all their possessions that they had gathered, and the people with whom they had acquired in Haran, and they departed to go to the land of Canaan." So they came to the land of Canaan. Now, why did Lot go with Abraham? Why did he go with his uncle? The Oxford Companion to the Bible says, because Abraham was the oldest son of Terah, and Lot's father, Abraham's brother Haran, had died, Abraham was the head of the extended family, and Lot was his dependent. As such, he traveled with Abraham to the land of Canaan. Just as we might be called disciples or followers of Mr. Armstrong, you could say that Lot was a disciple or a follower of Abraham. Now, because of a famine in the land, Abraham and Sarah went to Egypt, and you can read about that in the rest of Genesis 12. We won't go into that. Now, Lot may have gone with them to Egypt, but he's not mentioned. He's not mentioned again until chapter 13. When they come back and they settle into the land of the southern part of Canaan. It says, chapter 13, verse 1, then Abraham went up from Egypt, and he and his wife and all that he had, and Lot with him to the south. So they settled in the southern part of Canaan. And it was time to settle down there, but there was a problem. Genesis 13 and verse 6. Now the land was not able to support them, that they might dwell together, for their possessions were so great that they could not dwell together, and there was strife between the herdsmen of Abraham's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot's livestock. The Canaanites and the Perizzites then dwelt in the land. So Abram said to Lot, please, let there be no strife between you and me, and between my herdsmen and your herdsmen, for we are brethren. Is not the whole land before you? Please separate from me. If you take the left, then I will go to the right, or if you go to the right, then I will go to the left. And Lot lifted his eyes, and he saw all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere, before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, like the garden of the Lord, and the land of Egypt, as you go toward Zoar. Then Lot chose for himself all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed to the east, and they separated from each other. Now, it was Abraham's idea to separate. And so he gave Lot the first choice of where to settle. And it's kind of like when you're kids. Have you ever split a candy bar? Your mom gives you a candy bar and says, here, split this with your brother or sister. Well, you cut it in two pieces, and the other person gets the first choice. So if you don't cut it down the middle, you can almost guarantee your brother or sister is going to take the bigger piece. Well, here, Lot made the decision, let's separate. So he gave Lot, or Abraham made the decision, he gave Lot the first choice. And Lot looked around, he said, boy, that land looks beautiful. I'll take that land over there. So, was there anything wrong with that choice? You might say, well, that was a selfish choice. Well, perhaps it was, but he was given that choice. Abraham didn't say, don't take that, take this land. He made that choice. And that land was beautiful, like the Garden of Eden. It was a perfect place to live, except for the inhabitants. Notice verses 12 and 13 of chapter 13. It says, Abraham dwelt in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelt in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent as far as Sodom. But the men of Sodom were exceedingly wicked and sinful against the Lord. Have you ever wondered how different Lot's life would be if he had given Abraham that land and he had taken the land in the hills? Some of our choices affect us for the rest of our lives and even for eternity. Well, as we continue with Lot's story, war came to the peaceful valley. In Genesis 14, we can read how four kings allied together and made war against Sodom and Gomorrah and three other nearby cities on the plain. The four kings conquered Sodom and Gomorrah and forced them to pay tribute for 12 years. Now, I don't know if any of you have ever been involved in war or had to live with the uncertainty, the fear, the deprivation, and the death that happens when you're in war. My dad served in World War II. But I have never served in the armed forces. I turned 18 just as the Vietnam War was coming to an end, so they didn't have the draft anymore. I didn't have to be involved in war. But Lot was there when the cities were conquered. I don't know if he fought in the war, if he had, you know, they had asked him to fight with them. It doesn't say. But it must have been a terrifying experience to be part of that and to be conquered by enemy armies. But it didn't make him bitter. He remained a righteous man. Verses 14 to 16. And the Lord said to Abram after Lot had separated from him, lift your eyes now and look from the place where you are, northward and southward, westward, for all the land which you see I give to you. Where am I here? Genesis 13. I need to be in 14. Genesis 14, verses 14. And when Abraham heard, okay, we're not quite there yet. In the 13th year, okay, for 12 years they were put under tribute. And they were forced to pay tribute to these other kings. Now, have you ever had to pay taxes that you thought were unfair? Well, Lot did. He and the others in Sodom and Gomorrah paid this tribute to these kings for 12 years. But then they finally rebelled in the 13th year. And this is where I wanted to go to chapter 14. They rebelled, so the alliance of four kings came and they attacked them again. And this time they carried off a lot of goods and they took people for slaves. So now chapter 14, verse 11. And they took all the goods of Sodom and Gomorrah and all their provisions and went their way. They also took Lot, Abram's brother's son, who dwelt in Sodom, and his goods, and departed. And then one who escaped came and told Abram, the Hebrew, for he dwelt by the terebinth trees in Mamre, that the Amorite, the brother Eshgal, and the brother Abner, and they were allies with Abram. So Lot became a prisoner of war at this point. He became a slave. And it must have been a terrifying experience for him to go through that. But it didn't make him bitter. He remained a righteous man. And now in verse 14 through 16, I don't think we'll take the time to read that, but Abram goes and he rescues him and brings him back. So thanks to Abraham and his army, Lot and all of Sodom was saved. If we read through these verses carefully, we would notice that there's no mention of Lot being married. When he's taken prisoner, there are the women who are taken with him and the people, but no mention of Lot and his wife. But the next time we meet Lot is in Genesis chapter 19. And at that time, he has a wife and two married daughters. So whom did Lot marry? There is no mention of him ever going back to his family's old stomping grounds to get a wife, as did Isaac and Jacob. They went back to marry people. Some of their own relatives, basically distant relatives. They didn't marry in the land of Canaan here. But there's no mention of Lot doing that, so we may assume that Lot married a woman of Sodom, a woman of the world. And this would be compared to you and I marrying someone outside the church. Now, sometimes when people marry outside the church, God opens their minds of the unconverted mate, and they will come to church and be converted. Or they may let you have your religion and they'll have theirs. And they just manage to live together like that. But I know of several instances where the unconverted mate either never came to church and was a thorn in the side of the converted mate, or they came for a while and maybe just pretended to be part of the church and then eventually left and took the converted mate with them. I know several examples like that. The amazing thing about Lot is he married a man of the world, married a woman of the world, and he remained righteous. It can be done. So if any of us have an unconverted mate, we can be encouraged by Lot's example. Lot's daughters did not seem to share in his righteousness. And many of us have children who are not part of the church. Either we were called after they were grown up, or they grew up in the church and then left when they became adults. Lot did not allow his daughters to discourage him from being righteous when they did not continue in a righteous way. And Lot lived in terrible surroundings. The city of Sodom was a very wicked city. Genesis 18, verses 20 to 21. And the Lord said, because the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and because their sin is very grievous, I will go down now and see whether they have done altogether according to the outcry against it that has come to me. And if not, I will know. God says their sin is very grievous. It doesn't really mention what their sins are. You know, later we can tell by their actions what they are, and Jude tells us that, you know, homosexuality was a major sin in Sodom. But there were other evils as well. We can turn over to Jeremiah 23. Jeremiah 23. In verse 14, it says, also I have seen a horrible thing in the prophets of Jerusalem. They commit adultery and walk in lies. They also strengthen the hands of evildoers so that no one turns back from his wickedness. All of them are like Sodom to me, and her inhabitants like Gomorrah. So it's very likely that there was more wickedness going on in Sodom and Gomorrah than simply the homosexual activity that we'll read about. We'll note that here in Genesis 18, God said there was this great outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah. Who made the outcry? It may have been the victims of the crimes and the sins that were committed there. Because Psalm 9:9 tells us God cares for the oppressed. And Psalm 103:6 says God executes judgment for all that are oppressed. So that's one possibility. The people who were victims just cried out, and God heard their cries. And when he heard enough of it, he said, sent the angels down there. Here's another possibility. Maybe it was Lot who made the outcry. Do you think Lot could have prayed to God about how wicked the city was? Did Lot approve of the behavior of the men of Sodom? Let's look over in Genesis 19, verse 9. Here some men are talking to Lot. Actually, it says here, and they said, I guess these are the men, said, stand back. And they said, this one came in to sojourn, and they're talking about Lot, and he keeps acting as a judge. Now we will deal worse with you than with them. So they said to Lot, hey, you came here to live among us, but you're judging us. You're condemning our activities. So Lot did not approve of their activities. He judged them. Did the sins of Sodom bother Lot? We can go to 2 Peter 2. In verse 6, we'll start at the middle of a thought here, we'll break in, but it says, and turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemn them to destruction, making them an example to those who afterward would live ungodly, and delivered righteous Lot. This is where I mentioned at the beginning of the sermon, you know, where he's called righteous Lot. And delivered righteous Lot, who was oppressed with the filthy conduct of the wicked. For that righteous man dwelling among them tormented his righteous soul from day to day, seeing and hearing their lawless deeds. So Lot's soul was tormented by what he saw going on around him. Don't you think he prayed to God about that situation? And God answered his prayers by sending the two angels to check it out, and eventually God destroyed the city. But what about we here today? We live in a wicked society. We were talking a little bit about that before church and some of our fellowship. We live in a wicked society that's getting more and more like Sodom and Gomorrah every day. Do we sigh and cry to God about the evils in our society? We should. Let's check out Ezekiel chapter 9. Ezekiel 9. Ezekiel 9 and verse 4. And the Lord said to him, go through the midst of the city, through the midst of Jerusalem, put a mark on the foreheads of the men who sigh and cry over the abominations that are done within it. And to the others he said in my hearing, go after him through the city and kill, and do not let your eyes spare for any who have pity. Utterly slay old and young men, maidens and little children, and women. Do not come near anyone on whom is the mark. And begin at my sanctuary. So they began with the elders who were before the temple. Here we see an example of God preserving people who sigh and cry for the evils that they see around them. And maybe if we sigh and cry to God about the evil world that's around us, God will be moved to action. And we'll see the end of this evil world as Christ comes to usher in the kingdom of God. Now, was Lot a hermit? Did he cut himself off from the world and say, well, that's an evil society, so I'm just going to go hide in a closet somewhere and not be out there among the world? You know, did he go to the feast and not come home? Well, notice where the angels found him. Going back to Genesis 19, let's continue with the story there. Genesis 19 and verse 1. And the two angels came, and Lot was sitting in the gate of Sodom. And when Lot saw them, he rose to meet them, and he bowed himself with his face toward the ground, and said to them, hear now, my lords, please turn into your servant's house and spend the night and wash your feet, and then you may rise early and go on your way. And they said, no, but we'll spend the night in the open square. But he insisted strongly, so they turned into him and entered his house, and then he made them a feast and baked unleavened bread, and they ate. He was sitting in the gate of Sodom, right out there in the public, and he wasn't hiding. Perhaps he was preaching. Have you ever thought? Because they said, well, you're condemning our way. Maybe that's where he went out and tried to preach to them, but they wouldn't listen. You know, we're not supposed to be hermits either. Jesus prayed in John 17, I do not pray that you should take them out of the world, but that you should keep them from the evil one. We don't go to the feast to stay. We have to go back to the world afterwards. Now, there is a danger when you live in an evil society, and that is that the world will rub off on you. The more we come into contact with sin, the more desensitized we are to it. For example, the first time you hear a bad word, you might be shocked by it. But if you hear it often enough, you're no longer shocked, and eventually you may even start using that word yourself. So it can happen that society rubs off on you. Lot was righteous, we are told, and yet he may not have been totally untouched by the world. In Genesis 19 and verses 4 to 8. We'll continue with the story here. Now, before they lay down the men of the city, the men of Sodom, both old and young, all the people from every quarter surrounded the house. And they called to Lot and they said to him, where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out to us that we may know them carnally. So Lot went to them through the doorway and the door behind him. And he said, please, my brethren, do not do so wickedly. He called them his brethren. Now, maybe he was just trying to be nice, but that's what he called them. He tried to appear as one of them. And then, as if we were to go on and read, he offers two virgin daughters to them to have sex with them. And that's, I think, a hard thing for us to understand. If any of us have daughters, I've got two daughters, can you imagine handing them over to these people and say, here, do with them as you will, but leave these two men, these two visitors who came into my house, leave them alone. That's a little hard to understand. So that's why I think possibly some of Sodom rubbed off of them. Or it may be that he knew these guys, that if he brought women out to them, they wouldn't touch him anyways. Maybe it was almost an offense to them. They took offense to that. And he realized his daughters were safe in offering them. I mean, that's a possibility as well. The Bible doesn't let us into his thought process here. we do know that he offered his daughters, and of course that just made them angrier, and they said, well, we're going to do worse to you than we would to them. Lot did stand up to the homosexuals of Sodom, and he protected the angels whom he had invited under his roof to stay with him. And the angels protected Lot then by striking these homosexuals with blindness and pulling Lot back inside. You can read that in verse 10. But the men reached out their hands, pulled Lot into the house with them, and shut the door. Now, Lot was a very hospitable man. He met these angels at the gate, and he said, come to my house. And he fed them food. We also are to be hospitable. 1 Peter 4:9 tells us that. And Hebrews 13:2 is kind of interesting in this context, because it says, do not forget to entertain strangers. Some of you, you know, may have unwittingly entertained angels. And here's an example where Lot did entertain angels by being hospitable. So what happened next? Genesis 19, verse 15. Let's read this. When morning dawned, the angels urged Lot to hurry, saying, arise, take your wife and your two daughters who are here, lest you be consumed in the punishment of the city. Okay, now it's curious here, because it says, take your daughters who are with you and leave the city. Now back in verse 8, it says, I have two daughters who have not known a man, is what Lot tells these people. It says, let me bring them out to you. But when you get to verse 14, it says, Lot went out and spoke to his sons-in-law who had married his daughters and said, get up, get out of this place, for the Lord will destroy the city. But his sons-in-law, he appeared to be joking. So he's got daughters who have never known a man. And in another verse, it says, there were sons-in-laws. So his daughters were married to these men. How do we reconcile this? Well, Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown offers two possibilities. Number one is that there were two daughters living with Lot who were unmarried, and then he had two other daughters who were married. But if that were true, why in verse 14, when he goes and talks to his sons-in-law, does it not mention any other daughters? It doesn't say he went to talk to his daughters and their husbands, or their sons-in-laws and their wives, or, you know, they're not mentioned in that verse when he talks to the son-in-laws. Only the men were mentioned. Now, the other explanation is the two daughters living with Lot were betrothed to these sons-in-laws, and they were considered to be married, even though they hadn't actually been married yet. And this seems the most likely scenario. I think we can take that scenario just a little bit further and assume that the daughters were fully married to the sons-in-laws, but the men were either bisexual or homosexual, and they just never had consummated the marriage. They were married, but the daughters had never known a man yet. Maybe that's why they were staying with dad and mom, the two daughters. They weren't with their husbands. They were with dad and mom. And they may have been complaining about how difficult their husbands were to live with. Now, if any of us have had adult children come and live with us, we know how difficult that can be. It's becoming more and more common in today's society. But it looks like it was happening in Sodom. And Lot may have had the difficulty of some difficult family situations. But they didn't overwhelm Lot. He remained righteous. Now, verse 15. When the morning dawned, the angels urged Lot to hurry, saying, arise, take your wife and your two daughters who are here, lest you be consumed in the punishment of the city. And while he lingered, the men took hold of his hand and Lot's his wife's hand and the hands of the two daughters, the Lord being merciful to him, and they brought him out and set him outside the city. Lot lingered. Why? Was it hard to leave this society? Was it hard to leave everything behind? You know, someday we may have to do the same thing. We are told not to linger or to go back for things. We can read that in Matthew chapter 24. Matthew 24, verse 15. It's a similar type of instruction. It says, therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, whoever reads, let him understand. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let him who is on the housetop not come down to take anything out of his house. Let him who is in the field not go back to get his clothes. But woe to those who are pregnant and those who are nursing babies in those days. And pray that your flight be not in the winter or on the Sabbath. So, we also are told not to linger, not to go back when it comes time to flee. It says, even though Lot was moving slow as molasses in January, the angels were merciful to him, and they just picked him up, moved him out of the city, got him out of there. Lot was told to flee to the mountains, and he refused. We can continue in Genesis 19, verse 17. So it came to pass when they had brought them outside, he said, escape for your life. Do not look behind you, nor stay anywhere in the plain. Escape to the mountains, lest you be destroyed. And Lot said to them, please, no, my lords. Indeed, now your servant has found favor in your sight, and you have increased your mercy, which you have shown me by saving my life. But I cannot escape to the mountains, lest some evil overtake me and I die. See, now this city is near enough to flee to, and it's a little one. Please let me escape there. Is it not a little one? And my soul shall live. And he said to him, see, I have favored you concerning this thing also, that I will not overthrow this city for which you have spoken. Hurry, escape there, for I cannot do anything until you arrive there. Therefore, the name of the city was called Zoar. God could not destroy the evil society surrounding Lot until Lot had been removed to a place of safety. Lot had to flee. There is a time coming when this church will flee to a place of safety. Zephaniah chapter 2. It's one of those small books that's hidden in with the minor prophets. Zephaniah chapter 2, verse 3 says, seek the Lord, all you meek of the earth, who have upheld his judges, justice. Seek righteousness, seek humility. It may be that you will be hidden in the day of the Lord's anger. Speaking of the day of the Lord, when the last, period on this earth, it may be that you may be hidden in the day of the Lord's anger. Revelation 3 and verse 10. Revelation 3 and verse 10, God tells the Philadelphia church, because you have kept my command to persevere, I also will keep you from the hour of trial, which will come upon the whole world to test those who dwell on the earth. God will protect part of the church from the great tribulation that is to come upon the whole world. Revelation chapter 12. And verse 14. But the woman, speaking of the church, was given two wings of a great eagle that she might fly into the wilderness to her place. It does not say places. Her place, where she is nourished for a time, times, and half a time from the presence of the serpent. It may be that God will wait until we flee before he sends this nation into captivity. He could not destroy Sodom until Lot fled, and he may not destroy our nation, which sins just as bad as Sodom, and it's getting worse, until we flee. So what happened after Lot got to his place of safety? Genesis 19 and verse 24. Genesis 19 in verse 24, then the Lord rained brimstone and fire on Sodom and Gomorrah from the Lord out of the heavens. Verse 25, so he overthrew those cities, all the plain and all the inhabitants of the cities, and what grew on the ground. But his wife looked back behind him, and she became a pillar of salt. So Lot lost his wife. He became a widower. And in spite of that loss, he remained righteous. He lost about everything he owned, And he lived in fear, moving from Zoar to a mountain cave with his daughters. And in spite of all these losses and everything that he went through in all his life, the troubles and the problems and the society in which he lived, he was considered by Peter to be a righteous man. Lot left a legacy behind, not by his own choosing. But notice in verse 30, then Lot went up out of Zoar and dwelt in the mountains, and his two daughters were with him, for he was afraid to dwell in Zoar, and he and his two daughters dwelt in a cave. Now the firstborn said to the younger, our father is old, and there is no man on the earth to come into us, as is the custom of all the earth. Come, let us make our father drink wine, and we will lie with him, that we may preserve the lineage of our father. So they made their father drink wine that night, and the firstborn went in and lay with her father, and he did not know when she lay down or when she arose. And it happened on the next day that the firstborn said to the younger, indeed, I lay with my father last night. Let us make him drink wine tonight also, and you go in and lie with him, that we may preserve the lineage of our father. And they made their father drink wine that night also, and the younger arose and lay with him, and he did not know when she lay down or when she arose. Thus both the daughters of Lot were with child by their father. The firstborn bore a son and called his name Moab, and he is the father of the Moabites to this day. The younger, she also bore a son and called his name Ben-Ammi, and he is the father of the people of Ammon to this day. The modern nation of Israel, over in the Middle East today, has enjoyed a rather peaceful relationship with its neighbor to the east, Jordan. The church has enjoyed a good relationship with Jordan. Going all the way back to the days of Mr. Armstrong, we've had different projects in Jordan. Petra, which has long been conjectured as a possible place of safety, that also is in Jordan. Why has Jordan been different from all the other Middle Eastern nations? Well, partly because Jordan is not an Arab nation. The Arabs were descended from Esau. Jordanians are descended from righteous Lot. Lot was not a superhero. He was just an average person like you and I. He was not perfect. He made mistakes. He had faults. So do we. He went through many trials and tribulations during his life, as we have. But when all was said and done, Peter looked back at Lot and called him righteous Lot. When our lives are done, will someone say of us, righteous blank, and put your name in that blank? I hope so, because if Lot can do it, we can too.